Hi, I'm your host, Andy Bates. Thanks so much for joining us today for Faith and Family. Today's presentation is an encore presentation. Any dates or events mentioned in the program have already occurred. Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Today we have a great conversation lined up. Ever wonder how electronics impact us, especially our children? Do they impact how we interact with one another? Well, we'll find out. We have a conversation lined up today. We're going to talk with speaker and author Renee Robinson. We'll talk with her in just a little bit about children and electronics and what she's chosen to do, what they've chosen to do in their family as well. Hope you can join us for the conversation. It'll be a good conversation. Well, hope you can stick around for the conversation. Want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program. To find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, go to our website, kfuo.org. Look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section. There you can find the CUW logo, and that'll take you to their page. Find out about the programs they have to offer, where they're located, all the great things they're doing at Concordia University, Wisconsin. Go check it out, kfuo.org. Look for the sponsor section. Joining us by phone today, our guest is Renee Robinson, speaker and author of Seeking Christmas, Finding the True Meaning Through Family Traditions. You can find it on Amazon.com and as well as bookstores. Good morning, Renee. Thanks so much for being our guest today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, I was checking out a post recently on your blog at renee-robinson.com, and you posted recently about the conversations regarding electronics and your boys. Tell us a little bit about Renee Robinson and your family.
Yeah, well, we have three boys. Our boys are 10, 8, and 5. And we just noticed early on how there was this draw, you know, to electronics and how they wanted to take part in it. And initially, we were a little bit hesitant, but you know how it is. And it began to creep in a little bit more and more over time. And we just noticed that the more time our children spent engaged in electronics, the less time they were actually connected with us. And we really just didn't want to miss this time with them, because we know that in the grand scheme of things, we've got about 18 years with them, Lord willing. And we really wanted to capitalize on that time. So that's why we decided to place some limits and boundaries in technology.
What role does technology play in your life? What role, where does technology fit in your personal life as well as family life?
Well, I'm a blogger and writer, so technology plays a significant role in my life. Everything that I do, I am on my computer. I am involved in all social media. So it plays a significant role. And my children are still young enough that I have to be very creative about when I can engage in my work and when I cannot. So I do have to fit that around their schedule, which means I wake up about 5 a.m. every day and work for a couple hours before they get up. And then I try to limit my access to mobile technology when I'm with my children. So as far as my blogging and writing, I limit just to my home computer around their schedules.
What are some of the, with technology, I mean, it's a great thing, and it just continues to advance, and you mentioned that you limit mobile technology. It's so accessible. It's so convenient. What is it about mobile technology that leads you to, or that has caused you to limit your use of mobile technology?
Well, it's just so tempting to get more done. It's so easy because you've got it with you all the time, and it almost tricks you into multitasking all day long. And a couple of years ago, when I first got an iPhone, I fell in love with it, and I still love it. But I just realized that I thought I could do much more than I could actually do. And it was so easy for me to just do a quick reply to an email or send off a quick, you know, message by text or add something real quick to my online calendar. And I just realized that whatever I was doing, I wasn't actually fully connected to. And I read a great book once, and it was on the idea of rest. And she said, whatever you're doing, you should fully connect and fully disconnect. And I just took that principle and applied it to my technology use as well. So when I'm using technology, especially mobile technology, that's the only thing I want to be focused on at that time. I really don't want to be playing a game with my children and say, hold on real quick, let me just respond to this and I'll get right back to you. Instead, I want to be completely engaged, whether it's in technology or completely engaged with my family. But I don't feel that I can do both very well.
We often think that mobile technology would enable us to be more productive, to get more done, to if we can take it on the run, then that gives us more time with family or more time to do whatever else it is that we want to do. But it sounds like it's kind of a misconception about mobile technology. We use it sometimes even for distractions, don't we?
Yes, we absolutely do. Because it is nice to just, we might want to be distracted for a little bit. We might want to just take our mind off of our current situation, and it's a great escape. But the problem is the more that we do that, it just becomes a habit. And so then we find that it does begin to really play into our family time, and that time that we might be carving out for our family, we find ourselves just picking up the phone and reading a quick article or doing something that we might enjoy doing just for the sake of distraction.
I appreciate that you mentioned earlier about being fully engaged in what you're doing, whether you're working or playing or whatever, or spending time with family, being fully engaged in what you're doing can be important. We live in a culture that is now just constantly full of lots of things going on, that we constantly have distractions. We've got the TV going on while we're looking at social media on the internet, and other conversations going on in the background. Like it's not uncommon in households for multiple things to be going on at one time, especially multiple devices. I was adding up the devices that connect to the Wi-Fi internet in our home one day, and realized, you know, it started off with just a laptop or just a computer that connected to Wi-Fi. And it's amazing now how many other devices in our home use an internet connection.
I know, we're the same way. We've got plenty of things connected to our Wi-Fi as well, and it is amazing about how many devices that we have to do the things that we need to do and enjoy doing.
And you know, it's years ago we wouldn't have even thought of this this technology that wirelessly connects us to everything. Someone say one time, you know, we have, if you would show someone like a smartphone that we have today, like an iPhone or something like that, and from say 50 years ago, I'd say we have these devices that, you know, if you were to go back in time with your device and show them this iPhone or whatever it is, you know, whatever your mobile device is, and say, we have these devices that allow us access to like basically infinite information. We can use it to find any information in the world with search engines like Google and things like that. We could just about find anything. Yet we use them to post pictures of kittens.
Right.
Wouldn't that be like flabbergasted? You know, wouldn't someone from 50 years ago be totally flabbergasted by that?
They absolutely would. And it's so funny, but it's so true. It is so true. I remember. So my oldest son is 10, and about 8 years ago, I had a laptop for work, and I was working in an accounting firm at the time. But previous to that, we just had a desktop computer, and it was upstairs. So I never accessed it when I was with my two-year-old, and then suddenly I bring this laptop home. And at the time, I remember having a conversation with my husband that, oh, wow, this laptop is really distracting me because I'm very tempted to check emails when I should be building blocks or coloring. So it's so funny that I can look back now and think, wow, that was just a laptop checking emails. Now that's grown exponentially. The temptation is much larger, and it's a constant and daily struggle. And you're constantly having to make choices every day about where you're going to spend your time. And technology, as wonderful as it is and as helpful as it is, it also can just steal our time right away from us.
It kind of blurs lines for good and bad.
Yes, it does.
You know, with technology that you were talking about, with a laptop and internet access, some parents are able to work from home now rather than being in the office 5 days a week. Maybe they're home one or two of those days that they normally would have been in the office because they have access to all their resources at work via the internet on their laptop. So that might give them more time at home. But is it? How much, what is the quality of that time at home?
Right. And I struggle with that during the summer months, because during the school year, it's very easy for me to do all my work from home. So it's very easy during the school year to get my work done when the children are at school. And so I can be completely engaged with them when they walk in the door. During the summer months, it takes a lot more effort to really work around them. And some parents aren't able to do that, because mm-hmm. some people are working for jobs that they are being paid to do that job during that time slot. And so it can be a great struggle for families who are working from home, but trying to give their children that quality time that they want.
You've mentioned several times about being engaged, especially when spending time with family. Why is that important, to be fully engaged when spending time with your children or with your spouse? Or why is that important to you?
Well, it's important to me because early on when we began having children, I knew that this time was going to go by so quickly, and I really wanted to capitalize on every moment I had with them. And I saw how I could be playing a game with my child and how his eyes would just light up when I was absolutely engaged with him. And he knew that I was interested in what he was interested in, and we were talking about the same things. At the same time, there have been times where I have done an activity with one of my children just almost to check a box. And I didn't really want to do it because I had other things on my mind or other things that I needed to do. And I could see that my child knew that I was there out of obligation and not really engaged with him. And there was I can see a huge difference in our relationship when they have all of me or when they just have parts of me. Because afterwards, I see that they really open up to me a lot more. And the interesting thing is it doesn't take a whole lot of time. Sometimes it might be simple 15 minutes of sitting on the back porch, you know, sipping lemonade, having a conversation, asking about a book they were reading or something that they're interested in. But when they see that they have all of me and I'm interested in them, then they turn that back towards me and they have that interest back to me. So I feel like it's important to be as engaged as we can and to be very intentional with our time.
And why is that important? Some might think why is it important when children are young? Some might think, well, you know, especially when they get to be teenagers, kids don't want to talk to their parents. They don't want to share those things with their parents. Why is it important?
It is so important when they're young, because that's the time where we are their whole world. They haven't been influenced by the world yet, and we still have all of the opportunities to really fill their minds and their hearts with the love of God, with the things that are important to us as a family, and the values that we want them to hold. When they become teenagers, we lose a lot of those opportunities. We don't have that same amount of time with them, and they are influenced more by the world than they're influenced by us. So when we take hold of those young years and pour into them as much as we can, then as they grow, that bond that they have with us is going to be much stronger and will really help to carry them through some of those challenging and trying years.
It's so true. When that foundation is built when they're young and they're comfortable talking to you as a child, they're comfortable, they listen, you know, have opportunities to listen to what you have to say, but also they have opportunities for you to listen to them as a young child, and you build those patterns of communication when they're young. That builds the foundation for when the world starts to impact them more, when peers and society impact them, right?
Absolutely. And my oldest son in particular, he opens up to me more at night than any other time of the day. So it's always the time that I'm most exhausted, but I notice it's the time that he's willing to talk about anything and everything. And in the younger years, it's so hard as a parent because it's just physically exhausting, emotionally exhausting, you know, and you're working so hard all day long with the children. And when you put them in bed, you're ready to just be done and have a little bit of time to yourself. But I noticed that my oldest son, from early on, I would get him all picked in, and then I would be walking out the door and he'd say, "Hey, Mom," you know what? So turned back around, sit down on his bed, and he would just pour his heart out to me. And I treasure those conversations that I have with him, because I will hold this, he will hold this, but I know that as he gets older, we still have that open line of communication, and I hope that we can really build on that foundation. And he's 10 now, and he still opens up to me, and I just continue to pray that the Lord would continue to keep that, those lines of communication open, and that I would remain available to him when he wants me to be available, not when it's convenient for me.
And still no success in trying to move his comfort level of talking during the day rather than at night.
Right, that would be nice.
My wife and I, our son is 10 months old, and I think he's starting to develop the same patterns that your son has. He appears to want to talk more at night than he's talkative during the day, but certainly more so now at night.
That's great.
Well, you've certainly painted a picture for us of how technology fits in your life and why it's important for you to be engaged in what you're doing when interacting with your family. As someone who's a blogger, a writer, a speaker, when you're working, why is it important that you be engaged in what you're doing when you're working, when you're using technology for work?
Well, because I feel that I owe it to my readers to give them all of me as well. Mm-hmm. Just as I feel that I owe it to my children to give all of me to them, I owe the same thing to my readers. Without them, I wouldn't do what I do. And so they're vitally important to me, and I want to give the best of myself to them. So I feel that I need to carve out that time where I'm just focused on writing and connecting with my readers.
When we work, we work. When we play, we play. When we keep those things clear, it seems like we do a better job at it. When we start to confuse them, that's when things get messy, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is. And I find that the more I can hold to that principle, the better I can do at whatever I'm doing. I really do. I come away thinking, I maybe didn't get as much done as I had hoped, but I think I did a better job at what I did do.
And, you know, working here in the studio at Worldwide KFUO, we have all kinds of technology around us. And it takes a little while to get used to all the technology, all the things that you're looking at and running in front of you in order to be able to stay focused just to have a conversation.
Yes, absolutely. When I write, I didn't do this and I realized how distracting it was, but I write on my computer. And I'm used to just keeping multiple windows open and going at one time. And I would write a paragraph, and then I would hear a ding, and I'd click over and check email or click over and check Facebook. And I just thought, wow, no wonder this writing isn't going so well today. I'm not focused on it.
It's probably been about 10 years now since I read some research on this. It was about the time that instant messengers started becoming popular on our computers, on our laptops and things like that. And some brain research had been done on the amount of time that it takes to, like, if you're in the middle of a task and you get interrupted with something like an instant message or some sort of alert like that, the amount of time that it takes for your brain to get back on task and be focused on the task that you're doing. And it was just ridiculous. It was like 2 minutes or something like that before you could really get back into the focus on the project that you're working on. Now, if you take into consideration how many emails may pop up or how many instant messages or how many messages may pop up on social media while you're trying to compose something, even if you're just working for a half an hour and you get 5 messages, that's right. 10 minutes out of that half an hour that it takes to get refocused.
Right. So we actually probably would have gotten more done had we just ignored all that.
But we're so used to, like, the ding or something flashing at us. And it's amazing how it's even shaping our brains, the technology that we live with today. Think about our children and the technology that they're growing up with. I'm thinking about my 10-month-old son and how just TV and things like that just happen, you know, can happen in the background. And it's kind of like the soundtrack of life for some today. Whereas you know, earlier generations, especially like my grandparents, TV wasn't necessarily always in the home. If it was, it was in one specific room, and it wasn't always on, or even the radio, the family radio, wasn't on all the time. It's a different culture, and it's amazing how it shapes us, isn't it?
It definitely does. And I know one thing from my children, I want them to be okay with being still, mm-hmm. and being bored, and just being comfortable with themselves in that stillness. You know, we hear God the best when we are still, and we are just living in a time where it is very hard to be still, and we're very uncomfortable with stillness, and we're uncomfortable with silence, and we have at our fingertips the ability to fill that silence and fill that boredom. And I know it's tempting for me all the time, and I see it's just as tempting for my children. And I really want them to be able to grow up confident that and secure in themselves and being comfortable just being who they are, free of any devices, comfortable enough having conversations, comfortable enough being bored enough that they can use their imagination and grow their creativity.
Isn't that interesting how all the wealth of information, the accessibility of information that we have through technology, through mobile technology today, has made us uncomfortable with silence, which also limits us in using imagination. It kind of hinders our use of imagination, doesn't it?
It really does. It really does. Our family took an electronics bath last year. It was the first time we had ever done that. And for years, we've had very firm boundaries and limits where we felt that we did a fairly decent job guarding our family, using electronics, but not letting it take over our family life. But we decided that we just wanted to give it up completely for 1 month, all of us. And it was amazing after 1 day to see the difference in our home, just 1 day, because there was no other option. If you were bored, you wanted to quickly find something to do. And two of my boys began doing things that they had never done before because they had never been that bored. One of the boys went out into the garage and started just scraping together scrap materials, nails, screws, hammers, building things he'd never explored before. But the neatest thing was watching how excited he got. He did not know he had the ability to do that. So he was discovering things about himself that he didn't know were there. So I love just watching that. And then another one of my sons is he can be artistic if he spends the time, but often he doesn't spend the time. And when electronics were taken away, he just would sit and he would draw. And that part of him that he had not been developing began to develop again. So it's just neat to see that when you just remove the option, what else can come to life?
Mm-hmm. It is. It's when we take away the accessibility to infinite possibilities or infinite resources, it's amazing what we can actually do just with some silence and the things around us.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, we need to take a break. And when we come back from that break, I want to talk about your post, A Letter to My Boys, talking today with Renee Robinson, speaker and author of Seeking Christmas, Finding the True Meaning Through Family Traditions. Hope you can join us for that conversation coming up right after this break on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of Inspiration in Action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Abortion's taken the lives of over 56 million babies since becoming legal. It's like wiping out the entire population of California and New York. We continue to see the lifelong ramifications abortion has on the mothers and fathers of these babies. Another case in point is Stevie Nicks, lead singer in the group Fleetwood Mac. Stevie recently confirmed rumors about one of her best-known songs she wrote back in 79. It's called Sarah and is about the baby she conceived with the Eagles lead singer Don Henley, but aborted. Stevie said had they gotten married and had the baby, if it were a girl, she would have named her Sarah. The saying must be true. When you're pregnant, you carry a baby for 9 months. If you have an abortion, you carry her forever.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Finding just the right partner is a blessing when it comes to achieving God's plans. Hi, I'm Rich Robertson, President and CEO of the Lutheran Church Extension Fund. Before taking this position, I worked with LCEF in my home congregation. It was a joy to find a true Lutheran partner that understood our unique needs as we built a school and welcomed new families into our church and community. I hope you experience that joy too. Visit lcef.org to find out how your ministry can become empowered in its kingdom work.
In 1924, we embraced the new technology of that day. Radio. Since that day, we've stayed on the cutting edge of technology. There are many easy ways to listen to Worldwide KFUO. On the air, online, and on demand. We proclaim the gospel of Christ in both word and song. Now that's why you should listen. The where and the how, well, that's up to you. The messenger of good news, Worldwide KFUO.
Hi, Craig D'Onofrio here. I want to invite you to join me Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. for Reformation Rush Hour. We'll have some of today's most interesting and intelligent people on the show. We'll talk about news that affects your faith. We'll look at the world around you and talk about how it interacts with Christianity. And we'll have a good time doing it all. This is the fastest hour in radio as you drive home Monday through Friday, 5 p.m. right after Issues Etc. on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Do you have a reason to reach out to us at Worldwide KFUO? Is there a piece of communication you'd like for us to receive? It's not hard to reach us. Our street address is KFUO, 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. If you missed it, the street address is found at the bottom of our homepage online, kfuoam.org. Every day we bring you the gospel of Jesus Christ in word and song. Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
The world is the mission field of Worldwide KFUO. We bring the gospel of Christ to all nations. Worldwide KFUO reaches countries where missionaries on the ground can't go. Christ called us to proclaim the gospel to all nations, and that's what we do here every day at Worldwide KFUO. If our mission and worldwide outreach is important to you, would you please prayerfully consider supporting Worldwide KFUO at kfuo.org.
Hi, I'm your host, Andy Bates. Thanks so much for joining us today for Faith and Family. Today's presentation is an encore presentation. Any dates or events mentioned in the program have already occurred. Welcome back to Faith and Family. Today we are talking with Renee Robinson, speaker and author of Seeking Christmas, Finding the True Meaning Through Family Traditions, available on Amazon.com and other places, other bookstores as well. And today we're talking about a post on her blog, renee-robinson.com. I came across this post, and you originally posted it back in January, and it kind of went viral from there, didn't it?
That's right. I posted it in January, and it received about 70,000 views in its first week. As we approached summer, I decided I was going to repost that because it was a good time to remind us that it's easy to kind of get a little bit slack in our electronic tools because we have more time. Now, so I thought it would be a good time to repost that.
What did you say that was so controversial that got 70,000 views?
You know, it's so interesting. That was my question. That was exactly what I said. I said, wow, I had never had a post go viral like that before and did not. And the funny thing about that post is that I wrote it because my boys and I had been at a drugstore And the lady made a comment, which this is what I wrote at the beginning of the post, but the lady made a comment, wow, you boys are the first children I've seen in here all day without a device in your hand. And this was 7 o'clock at night, and I just thought, wow, really? And of course, as we walked out, my middle son was telling me how uncomfortable that makes him feel. So we were having the discussion about that all the other kids can do this. You know, how kids are always saying, well, everybody else does this. Hmm. And my children were always saying to me, Mom, whenever we're at a doctor's office, other kids get to do this and we don't. Or when we're at a restaurant, other kids get to do this and we don't. And so I wrote that as my heart to my children and posted it on my blog. And this was my reason, because it's really about me, not you. It's not based on the research and what the research says about electronics. Instead, it's from a mother's perspective that I don't want to miss this time with you, and I don't want to regret a second of the time that I have, and I don't want to compete against a screen for your attention, and I want to see what brings you to life. I want to see what you're interested in. I want to have conversations with you that can take us to a deeper level, and we can't do that when there's a screen in front of your face. So I think it seemed that so many comments that I received were from parents that said, wow, you just put into words what I had in my heart. So I think that was the reason initially with the positive responses was that it gave voice to what parents were feeling, but they just didn't know how to articulate. On the flip side, I definitely got a lot of negative comments. And a lot of people who definitely disagreed and said that I was setting my children up for failure and rebellion. So it was interesting because it was very controversial, but I think that it spoke to a lot of people, but a lot of people felt very alone in their thoughts. And suddenly they saw that they actually weren't as alone as they thought.
It's interesting Well, obviously, when you're posting a blog, you're out in the public square, and so yes, there. If you open it up for comments, you're going to get everything under the sun. It's kind of like hosting a radio show, and so you're certainly going to get all kinds of comments. And when you post about something that strikes a nerve, whether it's a good nerve or a bad nerve, you're going to get all kinds of responses. The folks that said, "Wow, this is exactly what I was thinking. I just wasn't able to put it in words." I can hear them, especially when it's a confession of I've been using electronics. You know, I have electronics that and use them so much that sometimes I overlook the opportunity to have a meaningful conversation with my children, you know, as a confession from parents.
Right. It was interesting because, of course, I wrote that as a letter to my children, and initially, the responses were coming from moms and dads, but it spread from there, and I started getting responses back from children. And those are the ones that touched me the most, because the second time I posted it, it went viral again, and then it died off, and then it picked up speed again. So as of right now, since I reposted it a month ago, it's received over 800,000 views in the last 4 weeks. And I have received responses back from teenagers. I've received responses from even as young as 11 years old. But I received one the other day that just made me cry when I read it, because it was a teenage boy, and he said, wow, I had no idea this is how parents felt about us. I'm putting down my iPad, and I'm going to talk to my mom right now. And I just thought, wow, even teenagers are reading, and they're seeing that it's not that parents are trying to be mean and trying to take something good away from you. It's that they want to give you a gift. They want to give you that gift of relationship and time. And they know that electronics, as good as they can be at times, can also really harm relationships and take away time.
In the post, to quote you, one of the lines, I want to talk to you when we're out to eat. I want to listen to your questions. I want to have training opportunities. I want to allow space for conversation that can take us deeper. And if you were always distracted with electronics, well, I might miss those moments. How are conversations when you're out to eat? How are those training opportunities?
Well, because a lot of times those conversations end up being something that might have happened at school. Mm-hmm. A kid did this, and I did this, and we can have that conversation of, oh, well, how did you handle that, or how did that make you feel, or if they handled it wrong, how could you have done that differently? Or a lot of times it's when we might discuss something else that's going on with them, some kind of fear they're dealing with, something that is making them anxious. It's the time that we have to, sometimes it's just light and fun, and sometimes it's a little bit more than that. And I think I want both of those. I want a lot of those really light, fun moments where we are just being silly and talking about nothing important, but we can still talk. But I also want there to be those opportunities where the bigger things can come out. Because like I said, my kids are still young, but I want to set the groundwork now that we have lots of open lines of communication.
And speaking of communication, you also mentioned the importance of being able to see the magic dance across your face as you discover the wonders of this world. And you talk about eyes and being able to see their eyes when communicating, and that, you know, electronic device can really just be a barrier and prevent you from being able to see those things. Why is facial expression and seeing one another's eyes in a conversation, why is that important?
Well, I think it's important for so many reasons. But first, I describe the eyes to my kids as just a window into the heart. And you can really, the eyes show so much emotion. And when you're having that face-to-face conversation with somebody and you see their eyes, you see the emotion. And the words that you speak to them, when you see their eyes, oftentimes you might stop what you're planning to say when you see their eyes, because you see the impact that your words might be having on them. And I really want them to be able to see how their words are impacting people and the emotions that are playing in their eyes. A lot of times they will change the course of how they're going to finish that conversation. Eye contact shows respect. I want my boys to grow up respecting people and respecting them enough to look them in the eyes. And when they have a job one day, you know, when they're going on job interviews, when they're asking their future wife's hand in marriage to the father, I want them to be able to show that respect by looking in the eyes of the man that they're asking to marry his daughter, or the job interview where they're telling why they're qualified for that job. And I think eye contact also communicates understanding back and forth between the people who are having the conversation. So I just feel that there's so many ways that eyes are so important. And when they spend time just on devices, whether it's communicating or just playing, they're not getting that practice. And it really takes a lot of practice. Communication skills take a lot of practice. And marriages fall apart over communication. Friendships fall apart over communication. And the more practice they can have in this face-to-face and connecting in the eyes, I feel that the better they'll be later in life.
Sure. Some might say, you know, with electronic devices, you know, with a phone, with texting or social media, things like that, you can connect with people around the world. You can communicate with people around the world, not just in your own little neighborhood or in your own little circle. So how is, and I think you've described this to some extent already, that communicating in person with nonverbals, facial expression can be so much different than communicating online.
And there's good and bad with it. It's like with anything. But there's been times where I have used technology to connect with someone who time and distance or circumstances has made it awkward to have that face-to-face or that phone call. And technology has been a gift where it's opened up the lines of communication for us. But then on the flip side, there's also been times where situations have happened and I have relied on technology to just write an email, and I could not gauge their thoughts and couldn't hear their side of it. Instead, I was able to spew all of my thoughts onto them without that opportunity for the back and forth. So I didn't have time to decide, you know, maybe I don't want to say that because maybe that's not actually accurate.
Sure.
In those face-to-face conversations, honestly, that's a lot of how conflicts are worked out. You have that conversation and you say a little bit and then you wait and then you say a little bit more, you know, and you gauge what you're going to say based on what they're saying. But when you are only relying on technology and you're just sending your information out, you're not getting that back and forth, and you're missing out on a lot of hearing their side of it and their heart in the situation.
And you can't hear, you know, intonation, and you can't see nonverbals with you know, online communication or electronic communication. And I want to go back to the topic of silence. You were talking about, you know, being, we have difficulty being still. When communicating, silence is, well, going back to when we were talking about just, you know, being still, sometimes it's awkward for us, but in communicating too, silence can be awkward, but is it important for us to learn about silence when in communicating?
I think it is. I think it is. As awkward and as uncomfortable it is, it is the silence that we can form our thoughts too, where we can really just sit and let things settle for a few minutes. Because if we're just too quick to give our answer or to spout off what we think is right, we a lot of times we'll miss the mark. So oftentimes in that silence, in that stillness, is time for everything to kind of settle a little bit and to determine what you really think and feel about a particular situation.
I think there's value in being able to be in someone's presence and be comfortable being silent.
Yes. Yes, that's a real gift to be able to do that. And it's getting harder and harder, but I know I sure enjoy being around people who are comfortable being silent and just sitting there and enjoying someone's presence without that need to fill that space.
Well, we've talked a lot about the value of clear communication and being fully engaged. And you mentioned in your letter that, and you mentioned this earlier too, that it's not necessarily about the statistics about how damaging electronics can be to development or attention span or the ability to learn. There's validity to them, but that's not what this letter was about at all. It was just about how you wanted to have quality time and quality conversations with your boys.
That's exactly right. And that was one of the misunderstandings, or maybe not misunderstandings, but it did cause me to go back and at the beginning of my post, put a disclaimer about my intent with this letter and to please refrain from negative or nasty comments. Because a lot of people who were sending me comments that were very ugly were saying things that I could tell they had not read the article. And because I didn't write a post about the pros and cons of electronics, I didn't write anything that was research-based at all. I wrote from a mom who doesn't want to miss this time with her children and how I want to see my children grow up in this world where we are surrounded by it. I definitely had to go back and address that that's not what this is about.
So you were accused of depriving your children of modern technology?
Yes. Some people thought that I was setting them up for failure, that they would not thrive, that everybody would, you know, far surpass them in the world. And, you know, I feel like I didn't grow up with this either, and I think I've done okay with it. I think technology is so intuitive today. It's so easy to learn that you don't have to spend years learning it. That's what's so great about it, and that's what makes it so fun to use, is because now anybody can use technology. When it first started becoming popular, not anybody could just pick up something new and learn it. It took a while to get used to it, but not anymore. Things are changing fast.
Absolutely. And technology is great when it works, but when it fails, then what do we do? I just had this realization the other day. Who has used a map in the last 10 years? We don't use maps. We use GPS.
Yes. Yes, my sense of direction is actually getting worse because I rely on it so much.
And, you know, it started off, GPS devices were a separate device, and now you can, you know, you can use your phone for your GPS. And so you have it with you all the time, so it's more accessible, and so you can use it to find where you're going. Honestly, we probably won't, another 10, 15 years, we won't know what a map is or how to use it.
Right.
It's kind of frightening to think about it. What would we do then if those satellites fail that GPSs rely on?
I know. I guess we would all be lost together.
We'd all be wandering around aimlessly. I don't know how to get there.
Right. And nobody can help us.
I mean, and plus we use it, I use it to estimate how long it's going to take me to get from point A to point B if I have a meeting or something like that or an appointment. It gives me a better idea of how long it's going to take me to get there because it calculates, you know, figures in traffic and things like that and other things, construction.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
It is. I just hope it continues to work.
Me too.
Well, so you're accused of depriving your boys and setting them up for failure. But do you really, do your boys have no access to electronics?
They have plenty of access to electronics. We set very firm boundaries and they are clear about our family rules. And now that they've accepted it, there's no pushback. The way that we set it up is during the school year, they have no screen time during the week. Because there's not really time anyway. Mm-hmm. They're at school all day. They come home. By the time they have homework, we eat dinner, and our boys play baseball. So if it's baseball season, we go to baseball, we get home. It's time to shower and get into bed. So if we allow screen time, then it's something else. We have to say no to something else, whether that's homework, eating, or playing sports. So we just have a firm, don't even ask during the week, and they don't. On the weekends, we give them 30 minutes a day, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And they can choose whatever they want to do in that 30 minutes, whether it's playing the Wii, watching a movie, playing on the iPad. It's their device of choice, and they get one 30-minute block each of those days. And other than that, they don't ask. They accept that this is the rule, and the only exceptions would be if we have, like, a family movie night mm-hmm. or a family Wii night, and we'll do those every few Friday nights. During the summer, we changed that. So we do allow screen time during the week, and we try to limit it to every other day. So they still don't get every day 30 minutes, but maybe Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, they get 30 minutes a day.
To the commenters who claim that you're setting your children up for failure and didn't take those things into consideration, I'm willing to, I shouldn't say I would bet, but my guess is that with my experience, especially working with college students in my previous career in higher education, the students that I saw, that I worked with who were able to handle their responsibilities well and certainly just more successful. The students that I was willing to take on as student workers because they could take on tasks and responsibilities that were pretty self-motivated were generally the students that had opportunities to engage in communication, learn about communication from their parents and other adults. They learned how to communicate with their peers, but they also had opportunities to engage in conversation with their parents and other adults, especially in their church and other settings. There was a lot of intergenerational interaction going on so that they were comfortable talking with people of any ages, any age. And I can assure you that those times of communication were not frequently disrupted with electronic devices and those types of distractions.
Right, right. I would agree. And that's exactly how I would love to see my boys grow up, is really mastering communication over electronics. If I had to choose one or the other, I would choose communication any day. And I anticipate that as they get older, we'll give them more freedoms and allow them a little bit more choice and giving them that responsibility of learning how to self-regulate more. But I had a lot of commenters who felt that maybe I was being too controlling and not teaching self-control. But they're kids, and kids are not born with self-control. Self-control has to be taught. Self-control is so hard for adults. We have a hard time controlling our impulses to spend time on social media or spend time on our devices. So if we struggle with it, why would we expect that our children can teach themselves self-control?
Mm-hmm.
So for our job as parents is to, number one, model it, model that self-control so that they see it's not just our words, but it's our actions. And then number two, set the limits where they have practiced using appropriate time frames mm-hmm. as they get older and based upon the child's personality, giving them more freedom and control. But with one of my children in particular, he loses time in electronics. I mean, 30 minutes to him feels like 5 minutes. And he says it all the time. I give him a timer. He sets a timer, and it dings at the end of his 30 minutes. And every time he says, gosh, Mom, that really felt like 5 minutes. There's no way that was 30 minutes. Are you sure? And I love it because I can show him that when you're engaged in a game like that, you're lost to time. You have no idea how much time has just passed. And so I feel that it's not setting him up for failure in the area of self-control. If anything, it's showing him how easily he can lose himself in something.
Well, sure. Look at that observation that he made alone on his own within the boundaries that you have established. You're giving him a little bit of responsibility. You're giving him the opportunity to use that 30 minutes as he chooses. He's got some responsibility there. He's figuring out how to use that in small settings so that when time comes for him to make those bigger decisions, he can make those bigger decisions based on the foundation that's been laid with the smaller, less pricey decisions, we might say.
Right. I would agree.
Mm-hmm. As he's learning how to use that 30 minutes now, how will he use the 30 hours he gets, when he's an adult during those college years? How is he going to use the freedom that he has as a young adult during those years?
We joke about that all the time, and especially with my older son, who tends to be a bit more responsible with his time, but that he's not. They have totally different personalities, and that's also what I say to families: is you really have to make your decisions of the limits and boundaries that are right for your family based on the personalities of your children and the dynamics of your family, because it's not the same in every home. And I was clear in my comments because a lot of people did comment saying that they really disagreed with my philosophy and everything. And I feel like with my older son, we joke about it and say, well, he says, Mom, when I go to college, can I just watch TV as much as I want? Can I? Yes, you can do it as much as you want. I guarantee you, when you get there, you're not going to choose to do that, though. Once you actually have the ability to choose to do it as much as you want, you probably won't. But see, that child does not have an addictive type personality like one of my other children. So that was some of the commenters would say to me that they felt like I had a position of my way is the right way. I was very clear that no, I do not feel that my way is the right way. I feel that this works for our family. It works really, really well. But I know my children's personalities, and one is very prone to becoming addicted to things like that. And I want to help him and not hinder him.
Well, I think you've helped us understand that it is important to consider your own child's personalities, the different characteristics, and take that into consideration as you're figuring out these things for your family, and certainly before casting judgment on someone else and another person's family.
Absolutely.
We've been talking with Renee Robinson, speaker and author of Seeking Christmas, Finding the True Meaning Through Family Traditions. Renee, thanks so much for being our guest today, and we'll provide a link to your website as well with the archive of today's program, renee-robinson.com. So if folks want to go check out your letter to the boys, they can find that on your website as well. We'll provide a link with that with the archive of today's program. Thanks so much for being our guest today, Renee.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
God's blessings to you and your family and your boys, and I know that you'll get to have good conversation with them without any distractions this afternoon, huh?
Absolutely. As I walked out the door, my oldest son said, don't mess up now. I'm sure he's about to go ask me if there was any mishap on the call.
Well, thanks so much, Renee. God's blessings
thanks
to you and
so
your
much.
Family. Take care.
You too. Okay, bye-bye.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.